Well, all right, listeners, this is part two of the episode of the evolution of the salesperson to the product expert. So in this episode, Callie and I will add further insight and commentary into the interview I conducted with Patrick McMullen. Some of the things you can expect to hear on this one are topics like pay plans, a driving sales study, and the Supreme Court case of Encino Motor Cars versus Navarro and how overtime works with dealership staff. If you haven't listened to part one, you should probably have a go at that so you can have full context on what we'll be discussing, what we will be discussing on this episode. So here it is. It is what it is, and this is the Wisco Weekly Podcast.
CarMax, their sales consultants get a flat, you know, base salary, and then they have a tier system. So when they sell, they get X amount of money for every for up to 10 cars, and then that.
Are those all flats too?
Yeah. So let's say it's $100 up to 10 cars, and then if you get above 10 to 15, maybe $150, and it's retroactive back to all 15 of those. So you know, if you're selling 20 cars, you might be making $250 per car plus your base salary. Millennials said that they would much rather have that type of model than the way it is today.
Now, Kelly, this is the hybrid model that is starting to affect the car business, where a lot of dealerships, for probably one of the main reasons in that sales is not as profitable as it once was, they're starting to wean down on the amount of money they pay towards a salesperson. So then now, as opposed to getting some kind of 25%, 35% commission of what you sell the car versus how much that car cost, now it's, okay, here's a flat salary. And then in addition to your flat salary, you get a bonus per unit of the amount of cars that you sell. So it still kind of creates this sales culture of incentivizing, the person to help you out as best they can.
So that hybrid, would you say that's more common, or are people moving even further away to a point where there's almost no commission base? Because it sounds like there's still some commission type work in there that you have an incentive to get over a certain amount. It's not just number of hours worked.
Yeah, I think this is actually the what the, you know, where the tension and where this unfamiliarity or unfamiliar territory is right now is that what is the ideal model, pay plan model, especially to attract employees to your dealership. Because essentially, you know, it's all the old school guys that have been in the car business for umph years that are used to the commission based pay plan, and they like that, they want that, but to start to put them in, you know, essentially a capped plan. I mean, this you're going to be capped now. Now, whether that cap is 60,000, whether it's 80,000, it's certainly not going to be 100,000 now. And so this is where there's a little bit of give and take with the dealership and the staff trying to figure out what is the best pay plan to attract the right employee, but yet still deliver a great experience to the customer.
Right. I think you hit the nail on the head with the right employee, because it depends what you're looking for. If you have someone who's passionate about what they're doing, then they're more likely in that sales mode and they probably want the commission based. If you have someone who just wants a job, then they just want to get paid for the time that they're there, but they don't want to have to work any harder than they have to get kind of the minimum, salary. And it's interesting because so maybe this is kind of a nerdy point coming from an attorney. But there was actually a recent Supreme Court case on the subject of this idea of hourly pay and then kind of the movement in the car business. So under the Fair Labor Standards Act, or FLSA for short, there's a requirement to pay overtime if someone works over 40 hours, but there are certain exceptions to that rule. And one exception is essentially around the car business. And so, you know, we can talk more in a moment, but about, you know, this terminology. But in this particular case, it was service advisors. So you can probably help elaborate on this, but you know, people who work within the service side, not just the true, you know, salesman when you walk into the dealership who you meet at the door, but arguing that they did not fall into the salesperson category and therefore they should get paid overtime.
Mm-hmm. So what was your, when you read this ruling, did you have a particular side?
It's funny because I feel like with most things in life, I always see both sides. So it's a little tough to have a strong opinion. But in this case, it was kind of about semantics. So again, if you think about the base concept is that you should get paid overtime if you work more than 40 hours. Then the exemption is if you fall into this category of, now I just want to read it here because I think it's going to be easier. So under the FLSA, essentially it states that overtime pay requirement does not apply to any salesman, partsman, if that's a word, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing automobiles, trucks, or farm implements. Funny piece of the law.
It's still included in the automobile industry.
Right, I guess, you know, tractors, John Deere's. So farm implements. If he is employed by a non-manufacturing establishment, primarily engaged in the business of selling such vehicles. So in this case, again, they were kind of focusing on the, and I say they, so it was the Ninth Circuit. It started as a California case, but went up to the Ninth Circuit around what is a salesman, a partsman, a mechanic, and do these service advisors fall into one of those categories? And so we can break it down further, but it seemed like the Ninth Circuit was splitting hairs over the semantics to try to argue that service advisors don't fit into this description and thus are not exempt from overtime, meaning they should get paid overtime. But ultimately, the Supreme Court said no for various reasons, kind of similar to what I agree with.
Service advisors are considered salesmen.
Again, when you kind of look at all the different pieces of the puzzle, that they're selling services. So are they the salesman for the cars? No, but they're still in the sales business when it relates to the auto industry.
It's interesting, this kind of lawsuit escalated all the way to the Supreme Court, and it seems like there's been a couple cases that have escalated all the way up to the Supreme Court too in dealing with the FLSA. Because in the dealership culture, it's pretty unanimous that everyone in the car business, salesperson, service, mechanic, parts, is a salesperson. Mm-hmm. So I was actually very surprised that this escalated that high, that there would be, you know, there would be an argument posed to differentiate the different positions in a dealership. Now, I think how this all of a sudden starts to apply to today's modern dealership workforce is, you know, in reading this opinion, the opposing justices, and specifically Ginsburg, who wrote the opposition, she had mentioned that in crafting the commission pay exemption, Congress struck a deliberate balance. It exempted higher paid commissioned employees, perhaps in recognition of their potentially irregular hours, but it maintained protection for lower paid employees. So the way that I'm interpreting this piece is that, you know, at the end of the day, kind of like you said, it boils down to these semantics. And the semantic here, as I'm seeing it, is the difference between if you get paid a higher wage versus a lower wage. Because I would certainly think that a service advisor who is making $200, $500 an hour is not going to be trying to file a case for overtime because that is a higher wage that they're making. Versus if you start to employ product experts, in which product experts now are a bit capped in what they can make, so they are going to be a little bit of a lower wage. So now I think you start to, again, I think at the end of the day, this is still going to be an agreement between the employer and the employee, of the fact that the status of this employee they will be a lower paid work, a lower wage worker, and yet still not be, you know, they'll still be exempt, right? That's
right. Exempt from having to be paid overtime. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, maybe they, you know, kind of revise the wording of this particular code section over time if really the culture of the car industry is to move more towards hourly. Because I would agree with that. If you're if you're working hourly and, you know, technically you only have to make minimum wage, I think we were talking about it, it's probably something higher than minimum wage, although minimum wage has been raised substantially over the,
especially in California. I think it's supposed to hit $15 by 2020, I believe.
I don't recall the exact numbers. I mean, I just remember back dating myself when it was $5 was the minimum wage, and I think now it's over.
Well, federal minimum wage is 7.25, I believe, but California is, it's like at 14, I believe now.
Oh wow, even higher than I thought.
Yeah, because they're supposed to hit 15 by 2020. Now, in the car business, the culture, I think, would, you know, I think all dealership executives would always agree that when it comes to a sales position role, if it's on the new used car side or a service advisor, that the quote-unquote minimum wage is still going to be more than what, for instance, in California would be than $15. You know, it might be 20, it might be 25, it might be 30, but it's not going to be 200. It's not going to be 500. So, again, I think that's kind of where this is where the transformation of pay plans is going to get muddled, and I don't know where this would put dealerships if this does start to shine a spotlight on their practices, or, you know, if it shines a legal spotlight in their practices as they pay their employees.
Yeah, it's part of it is, what are you trying to incentivize? So if you're paying someone overtime that technically could sit at the dealership in their chair until 8 p.m. but do nothing, are you supposed to pay them, you know, overtime or, and, you know, time and a half when they hit 40 hours for the week because they're sitting in their chair and they're, you know, trying to sign up for all the late, you know, the longer hours? So I, you know, it's hard to see how in this particular industry you would get away from some type of hybrid, because otherwise, where's the incentive to actually get the work done?
I mean, again, I think this is exactly what's starting to happen with dealerships as they start to employ more product experts, where you have vendors that are able to use their technology to lower the cost of employment, or the lower the cost of a, you know, pay plan for an employee, because now they're using technology to supplement that. And so this is where, you know, I know a good number of dealerships that are switching to this, and in which some of the employees that have been working there for years on end have left. Some of the other employees that have stayed are just constantly bitching of, you know, what's been going on, that there's this change that's occurring in which this is not what they signed up for when they were told when they initially entered the business. And I understand this is, you know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and this was the case even 20, 30 years ago, that even if you have a college or a high school diploma, not even a college degree, if you have a high school diploma, you can make $100,000 in the car business. So that was always the carrot that the car business has always dangled in front of their employees.
Think of it this way. If you have 25 salespeople in your dealership and you're at the average, you're going to lose 19 of them. And Driving Sales said it costs about $42,000 to every time you lose a salesperson. And my dealers tell me it's anywhere between $30,000 and $45,000 from lost productivity, you know, training, hiring, all that stuff. So let's say $42,000. That's almost $800,000 to the bottom line. So if you could figure out a way to change your process and not go the traditional route and think about doing things differently and aligning your sales process around the way you and I as consumers want to purchase a car.
Now, Kelly, this is where, when he talks about aligning the process to how us as customers would want it to be, that's the fairy tale, right? That's kind of the nirvana of where every dealership wants to get to and where every customer wants to get to. It is fairy dust, though. It's fairy dust because each party, in their own dynamic, dichotomous way, if that's a word, have their own objectives. A dealership's trying to make the most money. A customer's trying to buy pay the least amount, right? And those two will never, you know, your middle ground will always be kind of where we're at now, but you're never going to get to some kind of perfect nirvana. He had mentioned a driving sales study in which, as I looked it up, there's a couple of things on that study that kind of jumped out at me. And so Patrick was, he's right in the amount of money it costs a dealership as employees turn over. He had mentioned 42,000. It actually is 45, but whatever. We're splitting hairs at this point. Now, also in the study, it does say, it does offer what are dealers doing to address the issue of the, you know, of employee turnover. The top, in this survey, the top response of what dealers are doing is they're changing the commission, or they're changing the pay plan from commission to a base pay structure, or at least that's what they're evaluating. And again, so now we can kind of go back to this Supreme Court ruling of Encino Motor Cars versus Navarro. We can go back to salesperson versus product experts. Again, there's this whole dichotomy now going on of what is the best way to hire on the best salesperson or the best employee to sell and provide the best service for my dealership. So one of the things that dealerships have been looking into is changing commission versus base pay. Okay,
meaning moving more towards base pay?
Just, I think that's what you can probably imply out of this, but I think, if anything, that's what they're looking at. That's what they're analyzing and considering. How do we address employee turnover? And it looks like the way we have to address employee turnover is let's look at what the pay plan is. The current pay plan is mostly commission-based, but now what are the advantages if we do more of more of just a base pay, a flat salary? Maybe we do a hybrid, flat salary and bonus.
Interesting, because I thought that you were possibly saying that the transition is actually, you know, the turnover is from the move from commission to more of hourly or base pay, and that was creating the issue. And so now the analysis is, you know, do we have to go back to, and you know, I think you said the movement is slowly moving towards more hourly or base pay, so that would make more sense. But
yeah.
Again, I would think it'd be more of a problem to move to base pay in a world where it's always been commission based.
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, so that is the problem right now, is that you're seeing more dealerships toy around with the idea of completely eliminating commission and now going to base pay plus bonus. Whatever the case.
And that's where the turnover is happening.
And yeah, the turnover is happening more just in the car business, especially as millennials are starting to become the largest buyers of cars, especially over the next 10 years. And how do you then start to not only sell cars to millennials, but how do you then attract millennials to work at your store? There's all these different studies that say millennials don't like the process of commission-based. They don't like the idea of haggling, of negotiating, that millennials want to work for a store that's just one price.
They just want to show up and do their job and go home is the problem that I found. I mean, sorry for any millennials who may be listening, but I think the trend is that they always expect more for doing less. It's like, I want to work less, but I deserve more. And I don't know where kind of the entitlement came from, but it is kind of a generation.
So this is going back to what Patrick was saying of trying to align the process of the dealership experience to what the customer, to what to what he would want, to what I would want, to what you would want, Kelly. If that were all aligned, then that would be the best of everything. The other thing that the second highest answer of this survey of what dealers are doing to address the issue of employee turnover, the second highest answer was increasing entering compensation. So meaning that as opposed to, let's say, an employee, a millennial specifically, coming into the dealership world and starting them off with a $25 hourly hourly salary. Holy cow. Okay. Hourly salary. Maybe now it's okay. Again, I guess as what Patrick alluded to earlier, it's the flat salary plus bonus. So it's not $25. Maybe it's a $60,000 annual salary plus $100 flat for each car you sell between 1 and 10 and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm.
So if I owned a dealership, we'll say McMullen BMW, because I like BMWs and okay. You can make money in BMWs. I think my ideal salesperson would be, first of all, somebody that's coachable, okay. Trainable, somebody with a strong work ethic. Sorry, and I think with regards to being, they don't have to be technology savvy, but embracing technology and embracing maybe a different way of selling cars from the traditional model that we've done for the last 30, 40 years, and looking at it where it's based more around building it or selling a car around the way the customer wants to buy a car, not necessarily the way the dealership wants to sell them the car.
One word, evolution.
Like from caveman to...
No, like his whole point of... They have to kind of be ready to adapt to the current environment, the new technology, to how the customer wants to experience the process. It's really just evolving over time. And so if you can't adapt to that and evolve with the changes in the car business, it's hard to be successful.
There's a big issue right now in the industry where we ask $19,999 for a car, but we end up selling it for $17,500. Well, why? We fundamentally as an industry have adopted a market-based pricing philosophy, but we haven't changed the way that we sell cars. So we fundamentally changed our pricing strategy, but we haven't changed our sales strategy. This particular group, what they've done is said, all right, well, we changed our pricing, let's change our sales strategy. So by showing the customer this stuff up front, they can build the value in the car when they come back, and customers still wants a discount. Why? Because that's the way they're trained. Right. Salespeople are trained to negotiate, and customers are trained to haggle because they think that they're getting taken advantage of. So by setting that standard up front and talking about that and letting them know that this is the way they do business, their average drop per car over 36,000 cars was $102.
Kelly?
Dennis?
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
I can no longer haggle?
This will be the future of how you will buy cars.
You know, I think it's okay as long as we don't feel like we're being taken advantage of. But I think it takes time to get there. So right now, like he said, even if they showed you, here's the list price, here's the invoice price, and we're giving you better than invoice price, you would still go in and try to negotiate because you expect something better than the first offer. If over time you learn that if we show you the invoice price and we show it to you in a way where there's no way that we're lying to you, it's on a computer or iPad or whatever, you just accept that's, you know, the price of the car and you get something maybe slightly below it because it's still like a little bit of a deal. But you don't expect to get $5,000 off of the list price because that's just not the normal.
And the car business wants baby boomers and our generation, whatever we're classified as, to die soon because it's the millennials. And the reason why you have companies like Max Digital and Patrick that are hedging on the future of what the buying experience will be in that millennial employees selling to millennial customers. As millennial customers, they don't think as unfavorably about the car business, and they certainly don't negotiate as hard, or if any at all, as their previous generations do.
It comes down to people at the end of the day. And I think, you know, having conversations and working through problems and not just saying, well, if you don't sell 15 cars, you're fired. Well, what are you doing to help that person sell 15 cars?
Listeners of Wisco Weekly, thank you so much for tuning in. It's so humbling and gratifying that I can see more people tuning in every week to listen to this podcast. I have an immense amount of gratitude for Patrick McMullen as he had the chance to rap out with me, as well as all of my guests that have been rapping out with me. Also, I want to thank my co-host, Kelly Cruz, for always being there and sharing some of her insight. Would appreciate if you would send her some love on our Facebook page and write to her. Here's a taste of what we're going to be talking about next week, as we're going to continue this theme of the salesperson to product expert evolution.
These guys are busy. I mean, they're praising cars. They're getting things. They don't have time for the training and the follow-up. So when they hire somebody, they say, good luck, son.
There's a couple more episodes left here in season 3, and then I'll be hitting the road, attending a few different conferences to bring you some new material for season 4. If you have any ideas or thoughts or topics you would like to hear about, or if you would like to be featured on the show, please do hit me up, wiscoweeklypod.com, and write to me, and let's set up a time to talk. And as we end every show, cheers, pros, l'chaim, kipish, nastravi, kampai, salud to the customer experience.